Good evening. James McCanny here with My Science Hour. It is June 16th, 2016. Oh, June is halfway gone already. Anyway, I think we're in a time warp here. I wonder if you feel the same way. Anyway, tonight the main science topic, I will be talking about nuclear power and nuclear problems. Problems with nuclear waste, the nuclear energy industry, and this will be trying to give some details about why the problem will not be solved. Basically, it has a long time ago gotten into the political realm, and I really won't be talking too much about politics, but the world's biggest problem is the nuclear energy waste, the waste that is produced from using peaceful nuclear energy. As far as using nuclear weapons, there are regions of the world, of course, like Iraq, where depleted uranium, which was used on the tips of shells because it's an extremely hard material, is basically destroyed that country and the entire population. The people cannot have kids there because of depleted uranium. And it's something that cannot ever be neutralized. There's no way to get rid of this. So at any rate, I'll be talking a bit more about that, but in the United States, Europe, Japan, China, the so-called modern world, It's so modern, it's killing itself. But anyway, a few notes first of all. Travel, everybody is starting to travel because it's summertime, packing the kids up, going up to a lodge or a resort or camping or whatever it is. And I really have to stress to people that in today's age, you have to take water filters with you. There's just no other option. And one of my biggest selling items is selling water filter elements to people with basically outdated technology or a canister they might have sitting around that's still perfectly good, but they want to upgrade it and get the best water filter elements that are available today, which are mine, the JMCC water filters. So the short story is that when you're traveling, take a water filter. I personally can't imagine taking a drink of water or brushing my teeth or even washing my face in the morning without filtered water. It's just, something that I'm so accustomed to having a filter in the bathroom, a filter in the kitchen, a filter that I travel with, whether it's a very light, small one that I take on, say, camping or the medium-sized one, whatever. But you have to filter your water today. It's an absolute must. And get all of the junk out. Very long list of things. Now, I wanted to report this. This came in from a listener, that there was an article posted that the U.S. population is basically full of glyphosates. Glyphosate is the active ingredient in Roundup. And you see what happens to plants. You take this stuff and you spray it around. I don't, but I've seen people do this. They spray it around on the ground. 2 weeks later, everything is dead. It kills everything in sight. And so, of course, Monsanto has created breeds of agricultural plants that can live through this onslaught of chemistry. And that's what goes into feed bags, and that's what animals eat. And then you eat the meat or whatever, or you eat corn chips or whatever you're eating. The soy products, these are in just about everything today. And so you're getting a royal dose of glyphosates, and I'm not, personally, I don't, because I've gotten out of this really quite a long time ago. My food comes from a very healthy place, and you know, the water and everything else. So, but the American population in general, now this is not Europe, mind you. The Europe has banned this stuff. It's really the only place that's still buying into this Monsanto deal on a wide scale. Most of the Eastern European countries, including and then also Russia, have burned down all the fields of Monsanto GMO corn. They have banned the use of glyphosates and GMO seed. So in the United States, but it's in the water table too. So every time you take a glass of water off the tap, or you drink it in the bathroom, or brush your teeth before you go to sleep at night, or when you get up in the morning, I hope you're brushing your teeth, and hopefully not with fluoride toothpaste. Please do not use fluoride toothpaste at all. Those are things that you're getting a royal dose of every day. But anyway, the glyphosate issue is real, and I don't know what to tell people, because it is every place in the United States. It's in the food. It's in, you know, the, for example, corn is grown, you know, that's one of the primary crops. Corn syrup, I am told, is in one out of every four products in the grocery store. So when you pick up something and it's got that, it comes under many different names. Sometimes it's almost impossible to understand what's in there. Some products, like this goopy pancake syrup, imitation maple syrup, is like pure corn syrup. And that, you want a seriously royal dose of glyphosate, pour that on your pancakes in the morning. Excuse me, but I mean, I just, it makes me cringe to think what people are putting in their bodies. So it's of no surprise that the population of the United States is basically full of glyphosate. So there's hardly any surprise. The meat you eat, I mean, all of the products that corn goes into, and it all has glyphosate in it. So, and glyphosate is part of the DNA in the GMO corn, which it allows it to be resistant to glyphosate and grow. So basically, the glyphosate kills everything else and allows the glyphosate resistance, the Roundup Ready corn or soybeans or whatever, to grow. And I've told this on the air before, but I once was up in the Midwest, and I thought I would go out and get some survival food, you know, have it stored up just in case the world ended and I needed some food. And so I thought, I'll get oats, I'll get soybeans, and I'll get corn and wheat. And that's what I was going to get. So I go out to the feed store. This is the animal feed store for the farmers. This is where the farmers get their feed for their animals. And I told the guy, I said, you know, order this and this and this. And he obviously knew I was not a farmer. I mean, he knew it was a small local place, so he knew all the farmers. And he goes, you know, he puts it all in a big pile, and he goes, what are you going to do with this? I said, oh, this is for the house to, you know, have emergency food. He looked at me, he says, no. He says, don't you see on the label here? He said, this is marked not fit for human consumption. And I'm like, wait a minute. You're feeding this to animals. How can animals deal with it? And he said, well, it doesn't kill the animals. And I said, well, what would happen if I ate it? He said, it would kill you. You would die. And so anyway, that's the that's my feed story from the feedlot. But part of that is the glyphosate. And part of that, the glyphosate, which, of course, was used as for Roundup, part of the fertilization and herbicide package that goes along with growing that those grains. And then also the whatever they put on the grains as they're being harvested or whatever. I don't even know all the chemical processes that are used. But the end result is you can't eat it, or this is being grown. So when you look at those big, beautiful corn fields all over Nebraska, Indiana, you know, Kansas, wherever, poison. If you go eat that, you die. So anyway, just bizarre. But anyway, my water filters take out glyphosates. That's something that the carbon black filters, I talked about that, about carbon black filters last week. Go listen to that if you didn't listen to last week's show. But they do not take out glyphosate. So, you know, my filters do. That's one of the targeted toxins. Here's an interesting result just in. Not that it's a surprise at all. They have discovered more and more cities faking their water tests, their water test results. And they talk about lead, and that's the main thing that they try and talk about. But see, what they're doing is avoiding all the other things, toxins that are in the water, not to mention arsenic and not to mention the fluoride that's put in the water. So I love these city officials, how you go and talk to them, and they go, well, the fluoride is very good for you. I've been in dental offices, and the dental assistants saying, would you like the fluoride treatment today? And I go, no. And they go, well, it's really good for your teeth. And I say, well, explain that to me. Would you show me the studies that prove that? Well, it's good for your teeth. And I said, well, show me. Show me the test results that show that. They can't do it. So I call the dentist in, and they said, hey, they want to give me a fluoride treatment. He goes, yes, that's good for your teeth. This is the dentist. And I said, could you provide me with something from your training, your medical training, your dental training, that would show me that fluoride is good for my teeth? And I don't even talk about what what it does to your body, how it makes you into a walking zombie, and other things, a slow method of sterilization or whatever, not to mention other things. But they look at you like you're a man from Mars. And I say, all I want is the literature that shows this. And of course they can't produce any. And then you say no, and it's like they look at you like there's something wrong with you. Well, everybody gets fluoride treatments at the dentist office. It's what they say, it's supposedly good for you. Nobody can show you why, or tests, or any rigorous research that would suggest that. But they'll all say that to you. Anyway, cities faking the water test results is common. And besides, they don't even have a serious test for water. So they can't even tell you what's in the water. I've done quite a few shows on that. I'm still working at getting, I'm going to make a note here right now, to put the arsenic maps up so you can see those. But arsenic is in the water literally every place around the globe. And there's some places where it's very bad. It's in a lot of the Latin American countries. And Mexico is very bad. Texas is very bad. I don't know, maybe Texas will be a foreign country soon. I'd probably move there. I like Texas. One of my favorite states. That's one of my 50 favorite states is Texas. I like all the states. I like all of the United States. It's just some of the people there running it that make it a bad place. But Texas, very serious arsenic problems in the water. And it's there, and the people are drinking it. So if you, that's where, there again, my water filter elements take the arsenic out. And I just got a email, yesterday, from a woman who just got the GF water filters, opened up the box, replaced the old outdated ones she had been using, and she said they're smaller, they don't take up as much space, they no longer has to have the arsenic filter dangling down at the bottom, and the water is much cleaner. So anyway, it's people get these and they compare it, especially people if they've been using any other technology filter on the planet. They get my filters, they put them in, and they go, oh man, this is like night and day. I mean, the animals notice the difference. And once they have filtered water from my filters, they won't drink water from the other filters. It's strange, but that's the way it is. Anyway, I talked last week about affiliate programs, something that I'm becoming part of, and I'm very excited about the PermaCube revolution. It's linked on my webpage now, and this is a food growing system, so it's like a little unit, you know, where you have greenhouse, you have aquaculture, you have a little solar energy system there. And for this scale, solar is much better. My wing generator is a bit too big for these, like home and basically for a single home size. But you can grow all your food in a PermaCube. So this is the future, and I know people will take a look at it there. And we're working on a coupon. So basically, you would get a discount if you buy from my page. And I don't have that up yet, but... that should be coming in the next few days. So watch for my webpage, the PermaCubes. And this is just beginning. And when they say the owner, Jim, is a guy I've talked to quite a few times now. I think he's got a very tremendous product here. And this is just the future, where people literally, in a very efficient system, grow all their food, including proteins, in their backyard. So chicken, fish, shrimp, whatever you want in your backyard. And it's part of this where the waste that comes from these goes back into fertilizing the plants that you grow. Any of your table scraps go into a compost thing. It's very efficient. I mean, this is, I think he hit the nail on the head here. And so when I saw this, I wanted to become part of it. And now I am part of it. So this is wonderful. And by the way, my water filter systems will be part of this also. They are part of the system. And so you can't have a greenhouse and aquaculture where you have fish or shrimp or something like that if you have toxic water. Clearly, you have to filter the water too. So anyway, this is all very, very new and very wonderful. It's upcoming, so take a look at that. PermaCube Revolution, that's on my webpage now. Oh, let me dive into this topic of nuclear waste and just this whole nuclear issue. I'm going to bounce around a number of these topics tonight. I'm going to talk about shutting down nuclear power plants in the United States and then worldwide, getting rid of nuclear waste, stopping proliferation of mining of uranium, my wing energy system, of course, getting rid of coal, what the logical path to do that is, the true cost of nuclear fuel. There's a myth, and let me cover this topic too. I'll be talking about this. They are slush funds for like nuclear waste storage in the nuclear energy industry, and every time you pay a dime for electricity, part of that dime goes into this slush fund. The only trouble is they're not doing anything with it. And I'm going, hey, where's all this money going? So you have all these institutes and study groups, and they're all really studying the problem of what to do with nuclear waste, but they don't have a solution. But all this money's going into it. Well, it's like the cure for cancer. Why would you cure cancer if it's your cash cow? You know, and so nuclear waste is the same thing. It's on the flip side of the very lucrative nuclear energy industry. And so, at any rate, and I'll also be talking about the myth. I love this. The nuclear industry tries to convince you how swell nuclear is because you're saving on all that CO2. Well, let me tell you something. Plants like CO2. And if you like plants, then you should like CO2. There is no such thing at all as the greenhouse effect. And you notice that nobody talks about the greenhouse effect anymore. Nobody even talks about global warming anymore. They talk about global climate change. But oddly enough, CO2 is still the culprit. And so this CO2, you know, the carbon tax or whatever you want to call it, and all of these shenanigans, the political shenanigans around carbon or CO2. They don't even call it CO2 anymore. They call it carbon. They dropped off the O2. Isn't that slick? Boy, they just dropped those terms, you know, as It's like, you know, science doesn't matter anymore. Carbon is carbon dioxide, and global climate change takes place. Well, it's just, you know, political shenanigans. But anyway, that, I'll be talking a little bit about that also, about waste storage sites, and then also the filtration of water that is nuclear, full of nuclear radioactive waste. And that's a big problem. But to begin with, I want you to listen to this. This is in from a listener. Here it says, the Department of Energy warning messages for future humans to avoid radioactive waste dumps. Now, this is from the U.S. Department of Energy. What a bunch of complete paid-off morons. That's all I can tell you. Now, I just want to remind people that my degree, my advanced physics degree, is in nuclear physics. I've spent a bit of time in Los Alamos National Laboratory, not as an employee, but as an invited guest, speaking guest there, talking about my plasma discharge comet model and other energy issues dealing with the solar energy, the source, the true source of solar energy, not the the core nuclear fusion model. I instructed them on the surface fusion model, my work that I did when I was at Cornell back in the late 1970s. Also talked there with a guy named Hans Bethe, who was the main inventor of the core model and the chemistry that went along with that model. And basically, he understood what I was doing and was the primary person who recommended where I should get my papers published when I was having a little bit of problem with the Carl Sagan and the boys up there in the astronomy department at Cornell. But be that as it may, here's a... sit down and put your seatbelts on, because this is so ridiculous. This is waste isolation pilot plant. Now, it's a pilot plant, meaning it's a place that they're trying to see if this works. Now, this is, once again, listen to this. Department of Energy, warning messages for future humans. This is like in the future. So that people that say there's, we die off, and then there's other people that come around and they're in the future, but we haven't been able to communicate that to them. This is the idea. So warning messages for future humans to avoid radioactive waste dumps. Now, this is, listen to this. This is beyond Star Wars weird. It says, for the case of the WIPP, the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant, called passive instructional controls. That means they don't have to push buttons. They don't have to do anything. This would be just obvious to be to some human, or maybe caveman, or kin, you know, who knows. Passive institutional controls will include an outer perimeter of 32 25-foot tall granite pillars built in a 4-mile square. Now, if you were a caveman and you came walking across this and saw it, I mean, you'd probably say, well, what is this? Let's go inside and see. It's not going to tell you to go away. But anyway, these pillars will surround an earthen wall 33 feet tall and 100 feet wide. Enclosed within this wall will be another 16 granite pillars. At the center, directly above the waste site, will sit a roofless 15-foot granite room providing more information. The team intends to etch warnings and informational messages into the granite slabs and pillars. Wow. Now, mind you, this doesn't do anything to protect them from the nuclear waste that's there. Imagine somebody building this. This is a huge complex of granite pillars, granite monuments, and a granite-like basketball court, room, whatever they're talking about, a 15-foot granite room that sits on top of this. Now, if somebody comes along and sees this, and sees all kinds of strange inscriptions on there, do you think that's going to make him want to stay away and say, oh, well, let's not go in here because this is from a previous generation and it's a radioactive waste dump and it's dangerous, boys and girls? But this is so insane. But here's the problem. This radioactive waste dump is polluted to the water to the point where it would kill these people if they drank the water anywhere near this within 100 miles. So they're not even going to get to this place because they're all going to be dead from radioactive poisoning from drinking the water or eating the plants as they try to get close to this thing. What are these people smoking? I can't believe this. I'm going to quick read this again. This is a warning for future humans to avoid radioactive waste dumps. Passive institutional controls. It will include an outer perimeter of 32 25-foot-tall granite pillars built in a 4-mile square. These pillars will surround an earthen wall 33-foot tall and 100 feet wide. Enclosed within this wall will be another 16 granite pillars. At the center, directly above the wave site, will sit a roofless 15-foot granite room providing more information. These people are crazy. This is the most insane thing I have ever heard of in my life. This is insane. So anyway, that's what I wanted to start. You can see the mentality. Don't clean it up. Don't do something with this waste, this nuclear waste. Just put a big granite pillar around it that looks like some kind of an ancient complex, and that's supposed to keep the people away so they don't go there? Oh my goodness, I can't stand it. I can't stand it anymore. The stupidity coming out of Washington, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the Nuclear Energy Institute, these people are crazy stupid. But let me just give my definition. There are people in the geoengineering world that are saying that geoengineering is the number one problem. There are people in other areas that are saying that it's the number one problem or whatever. Here is my litmus test for the number one problem for humanity. That is the following. Let's take something as horrendous as World War I or World War II. Million man and waves of armies moving across Europe, killing each other, meeting on the Western Front, or, you know, all of this insanity, or, you know, the war in the Pacific, or Hiroshima, or these kind of things. You know, absolute insanity, but what is the lifetime expectancy of recovery? And let's just put it this way. If society got wiped out today except for a couple cavemen and they reproduced and brought out a new human civilization 10,000 years from now, they crawl out of the ashes and start to become modern or whatever, what would be the one thing that would drastically affect their ability to continue on as a normal human race? And that is not chemtrail spraying, even though that's horrendous and ridiculous, not glyphosate, although that's horrendous and ridiculous, not CO2 or carbon emission or driving your SUV up and down the road every day, none of those things, world wars in the conventional sense, none of those things. What is the one thing that in 10,000 years won't go away? Iraq. Nobody can live there anymore. It is a part of the earth that is uninhabitable. In the Bible, they used to spread salt on the land. There are areas of the world where people cannot raise crops anymore because they spread salt all over. Basically ruined the land so it could not produce any food. Without food, hey, not a good place to live. And so nuclear is the number one worst problem that we face today. But it's going ahead. It's accelerating at a rate of 1,000,000 miles per hour. Russia is trying to sell Bolivia nuclear power. What on earth does Bolivia need with nuclear power? You know, it's insane. They have plenty of sun there. They have plenty of wind. They don't have a massive population. They have, an oil industry, which they export. And so they really don't have an energy problem. If you look at a lot of the other countries, there's no nuclear power in the Southern Hemisphere to really talk about. The majority of nuclear power is in the Northern Hemisphere. A lot of it in the United States. The United States has over 100 nuclear power plants. That's 1/4 of the world's fleet of nuclear power plants are in the United States. They're aging, they're over-commissioned, they keep renewing the commissions in these, and they're burning nuclear bomb-grade fuel that was never designed for them. So, just insane. But I have a plan that we could shut off all the United States nuclear power plants today. Now, when Fukushima happened, Japan shut down all their nuclear reactors. When Germany, at the same time, shut down all their nuclear reactors, and they somehow managed to survive. Hey, you just turn the lights off. You don't run the computers day and night. You unplug things from the walls or have switches where you don't have ghost power going into... right now, the statistics show that 29% of the United States electricity comes from nuclear power. About 45% is from coal, and that's ever increasing. There's another 20-some percent from natural gas. And then there's other forms. If you're in remote areas, sometimes they burn number two fuel, like diesel fuel, to generate electricity. But all of these high energy content fuels, in other words, you're taking something, you're creating heat, then you're turning that into a steam, and then that turns into generators which create electricity. All of these methods are horrendously inefficient. I talk about that in my book, The McCanny Wing Generator World Energy Project. I talk about that, the gross inefficiencies, and by the way, that's why my wing generator project even was born, because I did a study for the energy industry and the inefficiencies, and even I, as a physicist, never really sat down and added them all up. It's like this: say you've been living for years without really having a budget, and when something comes along, oh, I want to buy that, or I'll buy that, and the credit cards are maxed out, and you got two cars on loans, and the house, of course, is on loan, and so your life, you don't have a penny left over, and you're trying to figure this out. Well, that's the energy industry. It's maxed out. And I did an analysis, and the biggest chunk of waste when you're burning nuclear or coal or natural gas or whatever is the heat that just goes off into the atmosphere, because it's a naturally inefficient process. It's called the Carnot cycle. It's named after a Frenchman. It's very famous. If you get to any basic level of physics, you will learn about the Carnot cycle, or chemistry. I mean, it's basic. If you try and convert heat into energy, there's a certain amount of loss in the recycling process, and therefore, at maximum, you're going to get around 30% efficiency. But there are many other factors involved here, not the least of which, and this is something they never want to talk about, is the infrastructure, the cost of building the infrastructure and then transmitting the energy, and all of the support equipment that goes around one of these high energy content transfer conversion facilities, whether it's coal, natural gas, or nuclear. Nuclear, by far, is the worst. Why is that? Because you have containment problems. Coal, there's just a big pile of coal sitting outside the power plant. The train comes along, dumps it there, and there it sits until they stick it in the generator to burn and create electricity. But nuclear is horrendous. They never talk about the true cost of nuclear power. It's like when you go and fill up your gas tank at the gas station, and, okay, you're thinking, okay, I'm paying, you know, $2.50 for gas or whatever it is. You're not calculating the cost of the veterans that are maimed and in hospitals for the rest of their entire life because we were fighting a war in the Mideast. That's not included in that $2.50. In that, you know, the that's taxes, that's federal, state taxes, local taxes, that's all kinds of other, that's transportation to get it there, it's a refinery, that's everything else. It's not the true cost of that gallon of gasoline you're putting in your car. The real cost would be about $80 a gallon if you really figure it out. So this is what I did with the energy industry. I did a real energy analysis. And it is horrific. Now you add in the people that have to work there, all the workers that built it, all of the you know, the pensions that go along with it, the insurance. You add in all the real costs. The cost of nuclear power is off the charts. So when you pay your electric bill, you say, oh, this is what my electric bill is this month. No, that's not your electric bill. Your electric bill includes companies going out and mining. It includes the people who have had their lives destroyed because mining vast areas. Uranium doesn't come up in a big chunk. You don't go dig down in a hole and find a big chunk of uranium and say, well, that's great, now we got a big chunk of uranium. No, it's finely distributed over vast areas. So you have to take it and you have to process it, then reprocess it, then reprocess it to get it down to a fuel state where you actually burn it in the nuclear reactors. So what we're seeing is political upheaval. We're seeing economic upheaval, and we're seeing people's entire countries being destroyed, entire regions of countries being destroyed. The control of this, and then the control of the industry, to the point where you cannot stop it. But very simply, if it would be easy in the wasteful country of the United States to cut 30% of our electric bill. Factories running machines that aren't doing anything, idling, running things, compressing air that are, you know, leaky, air compressors, or, you know, the whole host of things, using energy efficient lighting. Because you think, well, it would cost a lot of money to replace this lighting. A full third of the energy budget of the United States is in lighting. Cities lighting up. When you fly across the country, all you see is one city after another lit up, you know, that you can see it from, you know, 40,000 feet, 35,000 feet in the air in an airplane, constantly, all over the country. You know, you could tone that down to where you're literally saving, shutting off 30% of the energy, electrical energy that we use, and shut down all of these leaking. All the nuclear power plants are leaking. Don't tell me they're not. Some worse than others. I've talked about this on previous shows. Shut down the entire nuclear fleet today. We could do it. Simply, easily, and, you know, what Obama tried to do is force us into nuclear power by shutting off, imposing all kinds of restrictions on coal. Coal has come a long way. And if you want to pick between nuclear and coal, I would pick coal any day of the week. And I hope Trump gets in and reverses all of the damage that Obama has done in all the forcing, trying to force us onto a nuclear fleet of aging nuclear reactors that are leaking. This is insane. But what they want to do is come in and then revive the energy, nuclear energy industry. And the fight over uranium, which is the primary material that's now being developed for nuclear energy, is causing a tremendous amount of international damage. But I will tell you something on the air. As a scientist, as a nuclear physicist, somebody that knows about this, somebody who's worked in this my entire life, my degree is in this, it is impossible to shut this down because it is so powerful, It's up there with the pharmaceutical lobby. It's up there with Monsanto in the United States. Monsanto really doesn't even hold a candle to the nuclear energy industry. The nuclear energy industry is embedded in government. And because of its nature, has totally controlled there. It's totally out of the control of the hands of the people. But we could shut it down today. With my wing generator, we could literally bring that energy back, and also within 10 years, shut down all the coal plants too, and all the natural gas plants, and run all of our automobiles and transportation, including airplanes, on electric. Now, I think airplanes are a bit farther off to have them in the commercial mode. We would still use oil. We would still use coal-fired power plants. We would still have some of this infrastructure left. But we could phase it out eventually to the point someday that we would literally be running all of our energy needs off of the wind. There's plenty of energy out there, and I've done all the calculations. I show in my video dealing with the wing generator, three of my 1,000-foot towers off San Francisco could replace the fleets of energy power sources around the San Francisco Bay Area. That's just one example. That's just one example. And we could do this all around the United States, bringing down all of these power generating facilities. But then we have a little problem. It's called nuclear waste. Now, for this, I'm going to read a little bit, a snippet from an article here that's from the Nuclear Energy Institute webpage, and I just want to show how subtly they talk about this topic. This is called On-Site Storage of Nuclear Waste. It's a subpage of NEI.org, NuclearEnergyInstitute.org, NEI.org. This is the webpage, and this is on On-Site Storage of Nuclear Waste. It says a typical nuclear power plant in a year generates 20 metric tons of used nuclear fuel. 20 metric tons. Okay? The nuclear industry generates a total of about 2,000 to 2,300 metric tons of used fuel per year. Okay, here's the number you want to remember in kind of the analogy here. Over the past four decades, so that's since we started using nuclear as a form of energy, the entire industry has produced 75,000 metric tons of used nuclear fuel. If all of this were stacked up end-to-end, side-by-side, etc., it would cover a football field 8 yards deep. That's around, 25 feet deep, more or less, 24 feet deep. A football field covered with nuclear waste. Now, this is the heavy-duty nuclear waste. This is not gloves and clothes and things like that. So this is what they call high-level radioactive waste. And this is the byproduct, they say, of recycling used nuclear fuel, which in its final form will be disposed of in permanent disposal facilities. Okay, well, that sounds really good. The only problem is they don't have any permanent disposal facilities. They don't have any. So it says here, NEI supports the recycling of used nuclear fuel as part of its integrated fuel management strategy, which includes interim storage. Okay, they're doing that because the nuclear fuel is stored right at the power plant, probably the worst place you could store it. Look at Fukushima. 600,000 spent nuclear fuel rods up on the roof went up into smoke when that nuclear reactor went up in smoke. Not a good place to keep your fuel. It's like you're living in a cabin and you got your whole wood supply stacked up on the front porch and it catches fire. And, you know, not only do you burn your house down, but you burn all your wood supply up too. Not a good plan. And this is the nuclear version of that scenario. That's what happened at Fukushima, and it's killed the Pacific Ocean. Number two, research, development, and demonstration to recycle nuclear fuel. Oh, isn't that swell? They're researching, developing, and demonstrating. After 40 years, they don't have a solution. And you know what? They're not going to have a solution, because every solution has severe problems. Because the nuclear fuel that's coming out of the power plants today has to be cooled. It has to be cooled a lot. And as you, this is a point of no return. As you burn nuclear fuel, it has to remain cool. Otherwise, it's going to go ballistic and melt through the container. So it has to remain cooled. So the more you burn, the more energy it takes to cool them. This is an insane cycle. And then number three on their list is the development of permanent disposable facilities suitable for the final waste form. It says the U.S. state-by-state commercial nuclear used fuel and payments to the Nuclear Waste Fund. This is what I'm talking about, the slush fund, where you pay the you pay part of your electric bill to go into this fund that is for permanent nuclear disposal facility. Problem is, there ain't none. There ain't none. In every place they propose, nobody wants it there. Why would you want the nation's nuclear dump in your backyard? Not really a good idea, but there are places like Hanford, the site up in the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest, that is has a 3,000-gallon leak recently of nuclear waste, high-level nuclear waste into the environment. That's a horrendous leak. And they say all of these other glass containers, these are like glass containers, are basically breaking down because radioactive material destroys the containers that hold it. It's just, and they have maybe a 10 or 20 or 30 year lifetime or something like that. But all these containers are going to break down. One of them breaking down is enough to kill off the entire world, pollute it. The nuclear devastation at Fukushima has killed the Pacific Ocean, and it's continuing to move outwards. That radiation, the die-offs that have been going on, and this is another part of the scientific community covering their backs. They're trying to say that this is due to algae blooms. They're trying to say that this is due to global warming, to El Nino. Let's list all of the boogeymen that have been created. There is no such thing as El Nino. They associate it with the warming of the Pacific Ocean. The El Nino effect is real. That's the rainy, periodic rainy season at Christmas time on the west coast of South America. That's been known about long, long before modern man or the Industrial Revolution or nuclear power. So that is what El Nino is. Let's get back to the real definition of El Nino. This idea of the heating of the Pacific Ocean causing vast weather changes is ludicrous, impossible, and it makes about as much scientific sense as global climate change. But as long as those scientists can quote that and get a paycheck, hey, they're good to go. Life goes on. And then nobody has to do anything about the real cause of the death of the Pacific Ocean, Fukushima, or the nuclear energy industry worldwide, which is going full bore, both barrels, into the future with nuclear energy. There's a whole new breed of reactors that are coming online, and this is big international business to the point where world leaders, I wouldn't call them exactly leaders, all of them, but anyway, are out there vying for the positioning of business, ownership of uranium rights, and on and on. And that, as I reported, that's the whole deal in Ecuador was about that. And so I'm not going to repeat that again, but the world is insane over uranium. My friend Brian Porter up in Canada says it's the devil's chemical, or the devil's element. That's what he calls it. Uranium and plutonium are the devil's elements because they kill everything. They destroy everything. So at any rate, now the question is how to get rid of nuclear waste. If you look at the quantity here, 75 metric tons, let's divide it down into ton quantities, or 75,000 metric tons. This is not a small amount of stuff. So let's imagine that we built a rocket. You know, we got NASA. No, don't get NASA to do anything. Let's somebody that can perform. Let's get Elon Musk. Yeah, let's get Elon Musk to build a rocket. He can do it. That would take a payload of nuclear waste into space. With the average payloads that we have today, let's say you could take 10 tons. This would be a big, big booming rocket. Let's say you could take 10 tons of this crap at a time into space and then push it out into orbit. That would be a lot more massive rocket because you need to carry all the fuel to get you away from low Earth orbit. So, but let's say you could do this, and let's get the Russians to do it. They can build big rockets. But anyway, whoever, we send 10 tons, metric tons at a time, that would be 7,500 rocket launches. Now, there have not been 7,500 rocket launches since the beginning of the space age. In terms of those quantities of material. And so this would be a horrendous project to try and get this stuff off the surface of the Earth. But we also got to stop making it because we're adding this at the rate of a few thousand metric tons per year, as I had mentioned previously. So we're making it faster than we can ship it off. That would be just to keep up with the current level. At 10 metric tons per launch, we would need 200 launches per year just to get the crap out of our atmosphere and off the surface of the Earth, just to keep up with what we're producing today out of the world fleet of nuclear power plants. This obviously is not going to happen. But look at the expense. Look at the human cost of nuclear power. It is so horrendous. And literally, within 50 years, I guarantee you, the nuclear energy electric industries are not going to belly up to the bar and provide the money to build new containers to wrap this stuff in, nor are they going to pay for the cooling mechanism to keep this stuff chilled down to the point where it's not going to go China syndrome. Where is the future here? The United States is producing one quarter of the world's nuclear waste. That's not talking about the military waste that they're dumping in the middle of the ocean. The military is off the placard here. It is not being registered. It's not being accounted for in any of these numbers. They'll take entire nuclear reactors out of a ship and dump it overboard out in the middle of the ocean just to get rid of it. There's no conscience when it comes to nuclear waste. So how to stop nuclear proliferation? Impossible, given today's world. How is it actually possible to replace these? Well, the wing generator. A lot of people ask what the condition of the wing generator is. It's basically without proper funding. Let's just say that. And I'm struggling on my own, but this is a project that requires not a lot of funding. But look at the difference in infrastructure of building a wing generator that would replace a nuclear power plant. Look at all of the things that you don't have to do with wing generators. You don't have to go out and find uranium. You don't have to have world political upheaval over uranium. You don't have to have the processing plants. You don't have to have the human devastation that goes with mining, strip mining vast areas of land. You don't have to have the processing centers. And you don't have the heat that's generated by the nuclear fuel as it burns, with literally about 80% of it going right into the atmosphere, into cooling towers or into rivers and byways and cooling pools, and then literally going into the atmosphere, and you don't have the nuclear waste. And you know what the cost ratio is between the wing generator and a nuclear power plant? A nuclear power plant would run probably $4 to $5 billion. The wing generator cost round possibly under $40 million for a 1,000-foot facility. It's just beyond belief. And plus, that wing generator would run far outrun and outlast any nuclear power plant lifetime by simple maintenance. So stopping proliferation of mining of uranium, shutting down eventually the coal plants, the waste storage sites are a huge problem. Nobody is talking about this. Nobody wants to talk about it. Like I say, the nuclear energy institutes and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the Atomic Energy Commissions, etc., are all dancing around this issue. And as every year goes by, it's another year that the problem didn't get solved. It's another year where all that money went into slush funds to study the problem. Oh, they're studying it. They're studying it. And they're still studying it. And they still don't have a solution. And they're not going to have a solution. Nope. But they're still collecting the money. And now they claim that it saves on CO2, which isn't a problem in the first place. But they're going to try and convince you that, gee, all of that carbon coming out of those smokestacks, which isn't even true, out of the coal power plants. Coal is, I'm not trying to kid you, coal is not great. I don't want to see coal either. But the nuclear problem is not going to go away. It's going to poison and kill this planet into an unlivable dead planet. One last little final point here on the filtration of water. The Environmental Protection Agency shut down over 100 sensors around the country, the United States, because the readings were off scale. They didn't want to report them to the public, so they shut them down. It's kind of like election fraud. The exit polls, they were so out of line with reality that they stopped the exit polls. This is the EPA version of exit poll voter fraud cover-up. Anyway, water filtration is very difficult with nuclear because these are atomic-sized particles. They attach to dust. You can filter out the dust, but within a short amount of time, that nuclear atom is going to break loose and flow into your water supply and contaminate your water filter. That's why I created the pre-filter. It's called the Chemical Radiation Oil Pre-Filter. One of the things it takes out is radiation. But at any rate, it looks like I'm out of time here. Remember, visit the webpage, jmccsci.com. And this is Jim McCanney for another week. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.